if you're like me, Thursday after Ash Wednesday is a time of mixed feelings. It's nice to be past Ash Wednesday in some ways. It's nice that we completed the first day, maybe did pretty well, fasting, prayer, almsgiving. There's kind of relief. I don't know if that's quite the right word, but something like, oh, we got started and got started well. But with the second day of Lent, there's also this awareness, oh, well, we're just starting, and just passing through one day isn't enough. And not only that, we've barely started. There's still a lot to change. The things that we decided to do for Lent yesterday, already today, are going to become challenging. So, but one beautiful thing about Lent is that the liturgy is very rich. If you're wondering what to do for Lent or how to gain inspiration or guidance for Lent, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. The church is very wise about this season. This struck me when I was reading today's Office of Readings. We had a reading from St. Leo the Great, Pope St. Leo the Great, about Lent. Now, he lived in, what, the 5th century? I mean, you're talking about 1,500 years ago. Already the church was very wise about this season, what it's for and how to observe it. Listen to what St. Leo the Great says. Initially, men are made new by the rebirth of baptism. You know that Lent is also directed toward preparing those to be baptized on Easter Vigil. So that's the first way to be reborn. Men are made new by the rebirth of baptism. Yet, there is still required a daily renewal to repair the shortcomings of our mortal nature. And whatever degree of progress has been made, there is no one who should not be more advanced. All must therefore strive to ensure that on the day of redemption, no one may be found in the sins of his former life. I love this. No one should not be more advanced. So if anyone's thinking, I already go to daily mass, I already practice some self-denial, I already gave up smoking years ago or drinking or whatever. If you're thinking, I don't have to do anymore, you're wrong. And St. Leo the Great is the authority on which you can say it. No. Everyone should be making greater progress, and now is the time. Then he continues, dear friends, what the Christian should be doing at all times should be done now with greater care and devotion. It's a good way of thinking of it. Yeah, we should always be praying, fasting, and giving alms. We should always be loving God, loving our neighbor, and disciplining ourselves. But we should do it more. I mean, now is a season of grace, so that the Lenten fast enjoined by the apostles may be fulfilled, not simply by abstinence from food, but above all, by the renunciation of sin. Now, he goes on, there's a lot more here, but my point is, the church is very wise about how to observe Lent, or how to gain the benefit of Lent. So we can go back to the fathers of the church, or we can go to Pope Francis and get very wise guidance. Okay, now, the readings of the daily liturgy are a great example of this. You might think that since yesterday we were given the fundamental principles, prayer, fasting, almsgiving, you might think that today we'll focus on some particular thing to work on. But no, today's readings give us something even more fundamental than the particular practices. Because it's as if the church is saying, it's not enough to have good ideas or good sentiments or good principles. It's not enough to simply agree that prayer, fasting, and almsgiving are a good idea. We have to decide to do it. We have to make a personal step into the path. Otherwise, we're just bystanders. And that will do us no good during Lent or any time. So these readings invite us to make the decision to follow what we have heard and what we agree is a good idea, to participate personally in Lent rather than just be part of the church, which is going through Lent. And so we have this great reading from Deuteronomy where Moses puts before the people the choice. Are you going to, Are you going to follow the Lord or not? Are you going to choose life or choose death? When you enter into the promised land, are you going to flourish or are you going to wither? That sounds pretty obvious to us what the right choice is, but we know what he's saying here. Simply being a part of the group that crosses the Jordan into the promised land is not enough. I mean, they're all going to cross over. But that doesn't mean they're all personally going to decide to follow the Lord. It's easy to say yes today. What about tomorrow? Am I going to persevere? So on Ash Wednesday, it's easy to get ashes. Everybody gets ashes. But what about today and tomorrow? What about the journey? And that's where this Moses is giving us great wisdom. No, decide. Decide what this is, what your personal commitment is going to be here. So it's not just following the pack. It's a choice, a decision. Now, Jesus, of course, has much more to say about this decision, because the decision to follow the Lord is also a decision not to give in to our selfishness and our temptations, which means that decision for life is at the same time a decision for death, death to self, death to sin, death to anything that is not of God. And that's a costly decision. So the church from the very beginning of Lent is telling us this is not easy. It's not something that will happen automatically, because very quickly something will arise in us that says, well, I don't want to give that up. Well, I don't want to not do that, or I don't want to change my style. That's where decision comes in, right? I don't care how the decision says, I don't care how you feel. I don't care what you think will make you feel good. You decided to do this, now do it. I'll just share a little example of this. Over the past couple of weeks, because Pope Francis has been in the hospital, I started checking my media in the morning, because I always wanted to know the latest about Pope Francis. Now, that's a discipline I had started long ago, not to look at social media or email before Mass, because I know what happens. It fills my head with all sorts of news and curiosity. I have great curiosity. And so I just don't do that. But a couple of weeks ago, with this crisis of the Pope, I would check my phone and say, well, what's the latest on the Pope? So with Ash Wednesday, I said, well, I can't do that anymore. I mean, I don't have to know. I mean, if he dies, somebody will tell me. Or if some crisis happens, somebody will tell me. I don't have to be the one to check. But lo and behold, this morning I got up and I checked to see, well, how's the Pope? Now, it's not a bad thing to be concerned about the Pope, but I have to know my own weakness. As soon as, you see, oh, here's the Pope, or here's Trump, or here's Duterte, or here's, Ukraine, or here's some other thing that's interesting to me, and then before long, I've lost 5-10 minutes just in the world. So I say, this is a decision that I made yesterday that I have to implement today and tomorrow. You can use your own examples. That's why it's good to get this straight from the very beginning of Lent, because we don't change that easily. We don't change habits that quickly. It takes persevering effort. And we have to recognize that effort involves a dying process. Jesus says, whoever wishes to come after me, that's the positive side, must deny himself, the negative side. Take up his cross daily, that's negative side, and follow me, positive side. You see, it's both. So following Jesus is a very positive, that's the best possible thing to do. But that decision will mean continual self-denial, continual bearing of the cross. And that's important to know, because if we forget what we're doing following Jesus, when it comes to self-denial, we'll very quickly lose our perspective and say, well, why should I do that? Why should I not enjoy this or go that way? Or why should I change my habit? And then we don't have any motivation. So this is what Lent helps us do. And there's a grace for this time of year to help us persevere. So starting at the beginning, not just agreeing with Jesus that prayer, fasting, and almsgiving are a good idea, but deciding to actually do it in practical, specific ways, that's what will bear fruit. Not that we ourselves are making ourselves holy, but that we're participating in the work of God. He's the one who wants us to be holy much more than we do. And he's the one who gives us the grace to overcome all our lethargy and our selfishness and our bad habits. There's a grace for this. So let us welcome this holy season, this time of conversion, this time of choosing life, choosing to follow the Lord, and with all the implications of the cost, it's worth it.